And it's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And today we are blessed with having two guests today that happen to be a couple too, which is great. So I think our first time we've had I've had one other couple. But you are actually doing the work, which I'm very excited about. So we have Dean Noblett and Rebecca Couch. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
We're delighted to be here.
So what I usually have happen is we usually start by talking about your journeys. So if you could, each of you, sort of talk about your individual journey and how it got you to where you are now. And then because you have a nice story with the two of you coming together, why don't you talk about how the two of you came together and maybe what the work is that you're doing together. And then we'll talk about all of the stuff that you're doing. Okay. So whoever wants to start first, go for it.
Sounds great. Ladies before gentlemen.
Oh, there you go. What a gentleman.
Ah, oh, my story. Well, I guess I would best describe my story as a slow burn. Some people awaken with great fireworks. Mine was more that feeling ever since I was young, that there was more, that there was magic beyond our immediate knowing. So I always, as many of us, I think, as lightworkers, feel like we had this private life of questing and imagining. And so really, I felt in a way like I was living in two worlds, that I was living in the world, the material world and the regular world, having a great life, really. But there was always this thing running in the background in my life that was asking more. And the older I got, I found that I had, you know, followed all of the mainstream requirements, shall I say, with education. I was married soon after university in my early 20s. Worked in the art museum world in Ontario, as I still do. But I found that I had created a life that from the inside out was empty. From the outside in, it looked great. It was great construction. Everybody might say, and looking upon it, as if it was, you know, quote unquote, a perfect life. But I was yearning from the inside. So
precipitated that?
I think it's because I had everything on the outside, what people would say a perfect marriage or...
Yeah, but I've known people that have everything on the outside, and if they have everything on the outside, they don't actually grow because they don't need to. There's something within you that obviously made you...
The spark was feeling that everything was on the outside, but the inside was empty, the inside was missing. So it started in relationship with me. So it was in a marriage that I had been in for a number of years in my 20s, so it was nearing 30, and starting to ache, and aching for something that was much deeper and much more than what I could find in what appeared like a well-adjusted life. And so I started to ache, to quest, to read, to take yoga classes, to take meditation classes. I remember feeling a yearning to join a group of like-minded people because I felt separated out. I felt different than everybody else. And so it was a yearning to find others who were like me. And that was the ache that started the journey. And so the more I read and the more I did in yoga classes or in meditation classes or in going to yoga retreats, the more I found people who were like me that started to fill me. That opened up or awakened in me more of what was really my true self. Because I could see it in the other people that I was with. I couldn't feel it inside myself before, but I found it in their presence, and that's really when the magic began. Mm-hmm. So, and continues.
Mine was a bit more colorful than that.
You're an Aussie. You're allowed to be more colorful.
Yeah, being born and bred in Australia, Life down there is one big party most of the time. But really what happened for me growing up, I grew up with no sense of purpose. I didn't like school. I didn't feel I fit in, although I had great friends and was very sociable and all those sorts of things.
You mean you're supposed to do something at school other than just have friends?
I'm telling you, school was a real struggle for me. It really was. So I can relate to a lot of the kids today that struggle with school. It didn't make any sense to me. I really had trouble taking in the information that they were giving us. And I thought, well, what are we learning this stuff for? What's this all about? So in that sense, I kind of rebelled a little bit. And I got through just, but it was not an enjoyable experience. So I found solace in my friends and sport. I mean, we Aussies are good at sport. We thrive on sport. We love sport. But little did I know that there was there was anger and confusion that was building up within me that I wasn't aware of.
Because you weren't being understood.
I wasn't being understood.
And that's what all the kids are going through right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're not being understood. They're going through a system that's not meeting any of their needs, trying to put them into a box, and they don't get in that
exactly.
Box.
That's exactly how I felt back then. Of course, back then we weren't graded with ADD or ADHD. That kind of didn't exist back then. I just didn't have any support. I felt alone. So this anger and resentment was building, and I didn't really understand it. So I had sport as an outlet for that. And as I grew older into my teens and beyond, you start drinking, you start partying, you start drugs. And that was my outlet. Not that I got into any serious trouble. We just had a lot of fun, and it was great, and I wouldn't change any of it. But there came a time when you know, I fight bar fights because the aggression, I had to have an outlet for it. So there'd be bar fights. There'd be fighting on the football field. I played Australian rules football, so that was a great way.
Soccer, right?
No.
It's not soccer?
No.
Okay.
Australian rules football is a combination of basketball, rugby, soccer. It's a game, unique game in its own
right.
It's the best game. Anyway, so that was an outlet for me, and I'd go out there and I would play very aggressively and get into fights, and that's how I dealt with it. And then drink, and then I just kept doing the same thing. Go out, drink, hangover, play, fight, have fun, all those things. And after, I was 32, I think. I've been doing this for a long time, and it just happened one morning. I woke up with another hangover, and I said, there's got to be more than this. There's got to be more than this. That was the question that I put out there. And from that moment, with having that intention, without knowing it, all of a sudden a whole new world opened up for me. Connections started to come. I started to meet different people with like mind, wanting to seek what I was seeking. So people that were talking about meditation and talking about workshops. And my partner at the time said to me, I've just heard about this workshop of Bob Proctor, and he was on The Secret. So this is back, 20 years ago. And she said, it's a good workshop. I think you'd like it. And I kind of ummed and ahed. And she said, but they talk about God, though. And I said, well, that's okay, because I have no clue what that is.
Yeah. I said, I have. That's great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, too many people do have a concept of what God is, and it's not really the one that is.
Well, and I guess that was an advantage for me, because I'd been through the church thing and with my parents and confirmation and all that. And at the age of 13, my mother said, okay, you're old enough now to make your own decision if you want to go to church. And from that moment, I never went again, because it didn't make sense to me. But I kind of knew that there was something, but I didn't know what. So this whole transition into opening up to these other possibilities, I was open. I've always been open my whole life. And that's been a great advantage to me. So then things started to happen. I started connecting with meditation groups. And from there,
how did you find Bob Proctor's?
Back then it was called Born Rich.
Okay.
And the Born Rich was about the riches within you. So it was about the law of attraction back then. It's all about the law of attraction. And so I started to put into practice a lot of the principles that I learnt, and pretty well much created this whole new life for myself and walked into it. But there was a lot that was going on in my life in Australia that basically was blown apart in order for me to walk into the new life. And that, I mean, it was magical, but it was hard. because there was family involved, there was family business involved, there's financial things involved. But for me to really move into the next phase of my life and really come in to understand who I was and what I was here to do, my old life was basically blown apart. The rug was pulled out from underneath me, and there I was at 40 years old at this stage. Lost my identity of who I thought I was, lost all our business, finances, my relationship after 11 years, and there I was. Had moved to Sydney from Adelaide. I was born in Adelaide. I'd moved to Sydney for our business, but lasted 12 months. This is a third generation business, mind you. It was huge. The legacy of our grandfather that basically was blown apart. But it was perfect. It had to happen. I can see that now. And it's been a struggle for my family and brothers who are involved, and my father in particular. But it's perfect because that's how it happens. And when I was there, basically emotionally stripped bare and had a clean slate, then I began to put all the principles and things that I'd learned about, and I was meditating and I was visualizing and I was doing vision boards and I was doing a lot of my own inner work and going on intensives to help, because I wanted a fast track. I said, okay, I'll do whatever it takes. And then I reached a point where I said to the universe, I said to God, okay, I'm ready now. I'll go wherever I need to be with who I'm meant to be with and to do the work I'm meant to do. And I meant it. And what happened was, from Sydney, I end up in Schomberg, Ontario. I was living on the harbour in Sydney. It was Lloydtown, where Beckett was living at the time, on a farm, on a pig farm. So I ended up Sydney, Australia.
Okay, so how did that exactly happen? Sydney, it's on the ocean, it's a really far way.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I mean, it was a magical journey, but that's part of the next story of how we came to meet. Rebecca and I came to meet, and we met in California, in Mount Shasta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't meet in Schomburg.
No.
Because I'm thinking, wow, that's really coincidental. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so go ahead, Chelsea.
Well, I think what I'll do is take you back to the time when the bombs went off in both of our lives. So Dean's bomb was the dissolution of a third generation family business alone in a big city, as he described. At the really very much the same time for me was the end of my 12-year marriage, and I was living now alone on a 100-acre farm on the top floor of a farmhouse by myself in what I now see as my nesting cocoon stage, which is the time, mid-30s, to really think about who I was and not who I had become through someone else's eyes in my life. So it was an awesome time. It was a tough time. But an awesome time, and always on reflection, it's even more awesome because each pain and each growth was my own, and I rode with it, and I learned about it, and I got to know myself. But during that process, of course, as I was rebirthing myself, I too was dreaming of the person that I wanted to become and was becoming. I was dreaming of my ideal partner and the kind of life that we would have together and what we might do together. And I was very, as Dean was, simultaneously, he's in Sydney, I'm in Schomburg, getting really, really clear about it, writing about it, doing imaging about it, meditating about it. I made a very distinct list of all of the attributes of my ideal partner, fully knowing that as soon as you make the list, you must become every aspect of that was on that list. So
that's a really important thing for people who, you know, are trying to attract partners, and it's a really big thing that people don't get. They think, well, I'll focus on, you know, these qualities that I want in a partner, but they don't realize that, you know, you can only attract what you are. Yes.
So as I wrote that list and said, you know, the creative, the dynamic, the mature, the responsible and generous with money, the, you know, awesome dancer on the dance floor, all whatever those attributes were that I had, you know, very distinctly dreamt of.
I'm told.
Oh, really good.
They called me Dean the Dancing Machine.
Really? Okay. I'll have to check that out sometime.
He's a wonderful dancer. But I had to be sure that I was everything on that list. And so that's what I spent my time in my cocoon time, saying, okay, well, I'm dreaming of my prince, so I'm dreaming of the king. I need to become the queen. And so I worked at that. And I had a great time becoming that. And in that process, through meditation groups, and I was taking a transpersonal counseling course at the time, it expanded my awareness of a much bigger community. Beyond my immediate community, I was becoming aware of the planetary lightworking community. So I was drawn to the WISAC conference, which is a celebration on the Buddha's birthday and the first full moon in Taurus every year, which has become a planetary lightworker celebration. It's like a rebirthing time. It's the new year. It's the beginning of a new year when the Buddha comes to the WISAC Valley to transmit greater light and teachings through the Christ to the lightworkers on the planet. So I was drawn to the WISAC conference in California. And at the same time, maybe Dean will continue his story now.
Well, actually, you were going to Ireland initially, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll get back to that because it kind of hots up here. It's a neat story. So I was in Sydney. My family all expected me to go back home once the business closed. They said, oh, well, you're coming back home now. And something inside me said, no, I've got to stay. I didn't know why. I was just learning at that stage to trust that inner voice and the intuition. So they all couldn't understand it, and I'm staying in Sydney doing my thing and planning, you know, creating this life and trying to say, okay, what do you really want to do? And I just completed my Reiki Mastery. It was my first step, and I thought, well, I really like to teach people these sorts of things about healing, about Reiki, spiritual concepts. So that was my goal at that time. But what I didn't realize, I was actually I had to experience and live it and to see the whole thing unfold in process for me to really be qualified to teach. Because to teach from mental concepts or just reading about things is not really authentic, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. And so I now understand my whole journey was really my qualifications to teach what we do teach now. Because people say, oh, what's your qualifications? Well, credentials. It's my life. Mm-hmm. So I was vision mapping and getting very clear and writing my list, but I was very diligent in visualizing and meditating twice a day and understanding that, you know, you need to connect to your higher self and listen to that guidance that will guide you along your path and towards your purpose. And of course, your ego, the negative part of yourself, the fear, based in fear, is always nagging in the back of your mind, questioning and putting the doubts in your head. But I was really diligent in listening to the guidance that was coming from within, and I just happened to be on the website, on the internet, sorry, and I'd heard someone mention Mount Shasta, and the name, for whatever reason, never heard of it, the name struck a nerve. I thought, Mount Shasta, that sounds cool. So I went on and researched it and found connected to that was the WISAC Festival. And at that very moment, in that moment, the voice in my head said, you have to go. You have to go to this festival. The other voice in my head,
yeah,
I call it the Gollum and Smeagol, you know, from Lord of the Rings, is saying, but you can't afford it. You're not working. Or you don't like traveling on your own. All the reasons why not to go. And the voice was saying, you need to go. So in that moment, I printed out the registration form, filled it out, wrote out the check, sent it off so that I couldn't back out. So I was committed. But it was that voice and it was that very act that basically led to the transition and the change of my life entirely because I listened. And from there, I mean, five other people from my meditation group ended up traveling with me. So we had a group going. And there's friends in Sedona. There was a whole lot of other things happening. I spent some time in Sedona, but that was after we met. And, yeah, we go to Mount Shasta, and ultimately out of 1,200 people, Rebecca's sitting in front of me, but there's probably a little bit more to it than that. But that's how we eventually connected, and Rebecca knew straight off. I was a little bit slow. Always been a little bit slow. But
I think men generally.
Yeah, I think so. I can attest to that.
We love that about you.
But Rebecca had seen me in the Crystal Wings or one of the stores the day before and heard my accent, and it caught her attention. And I was having a reading or something at the time. And, yeah, we just met, and at the conference, the fellow I was traveling with happened to buy a poster of an angel called the Angel of the Chalice. And he was bringing it back and showing it to me, and Rebecca turned and saw it. And she said, "Oh, isn't that a wonderful poster? I just bought that one." And Rob came to me, and Rebecca turned around, and I don't know if he knew I was sitting behind you then or not, and he didn't. We connected at that moment. We started talking. Rob disappeared, and we talked the entire break. And then we hugged at the end, and she said, "Oh, by the way, my name's Rebecca." And I said, "Well, my name's Dean." And she went, "Oh, that's my most favorite name in the world. That's my father's name and my grandfather's name." And and from there, I mean, all the what we found out, without going into too much detail now because it's another story, but what we found out was that our families were basically were parallels on different sides of the planet, that the similarities in our families is uncanny, mm-hmm. uncanny. So, you know, when you're in the flow, when you surrender, and when you listen to the voice, you listen to that intuition, you have the courage to just say, "You know what? I'm going to do this." And you just allow and go with the flow, that's when magic happens. I mean, I had a reading with a lady who said to me, "Oh, your partner's not here in Australia." Mm-hmm. She said, "Oh, she's in North America." And I kind of looked at her and said, well, can you narrow it down for me a bit? She said, "Oh, don't worry about it, you'll find her." She said, "Just let go." And I just said, okay. I mean, how else could you orchestrate something like that?
And I had a reading at about the same time, a couple of years before we met, and the woman giving me the reading said that my true love was in Australia. And I said, "But where? Am I supposed to just sell everything and hop on a plane with my bags and go to Sydney in the middle of the street and say, 'Here I am'?" And she said, "Yes."
Oh.
It would have been very interesting if I'd had the courage in that moment to go there, because that's indeed where he was at that time. So, fascinating, fascinating.
It would have been harder to pick up, though. It's kind of more unique when you're in California and you hear an Australian accent than when you're in Australia.
Yes.
Yeah.
All have the same accent.
Yeah, I think her telling me that at the time was to loosen me up to how extraordinary, that the possibilities were even larger than what I maybe had been imagining at the time. Mm-hmm. And so by saying that, it expands your consciousness even more to allow. And I think that's probably, you know, the teaching message of anything that we're saying to this point is the importance of that dream time, the importance of really energizing and allowing yourself to dream without any parameters, without anything holding you back. What is your perfect life? What is the dream that you want to walk into? Many of us, you know, have a beautiful wishing well, golden wishing well, and we don't put any wishes into it. And that was proof right there for both of us, that the time that we had spent in the 5 years when we were single before we met, the time that we spent working on ourselves and dreaming of the life that we wanted to create was the investment that we later, you know, have walked into.
Mm. Yeah. And so is that the work then that you do? You have a website and the work that you call is Heartlight, which is heartlight.ca. So is that what Heartlight is all about?
Yeah, Heartlight is essentially helping people move into their heart, because that's where you've got to come from. Because we live so much in our heads these days, and you know, that's just the way we've been conditioned to live that way. But it's now the time to understand and connect to the other part, that inner essence of ourself, which is through the heart. I mean,
you know, it's interesting, and I'm just going to bring up this up because sure. I've talked about it before, and that has always been mine, is that it's always in the heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've talked with different people, and, you know, some people are convinced that it's in your solar plexus, and some people are convinced it's in your third eye. And I don't know, maybe that there's necessarily the one place, and I think maybe different souls or different groups, you know, maybe there is a different, you know, they connect from a different place or they go into a different place. I know that regardless, it's, you know, our central core, and it's definitely where we are. And, you know, you can't convince me because I'm already there. The heart is where I believe it is. But I do know that there are others that, you know, are just as strong in their belief that it can be in other places. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Absolutely. I mean, really, for us, the heart is really symbolic. I always say to people, you know, it's often said that the eyes are the windows to the soul. And I often say, and the heart is the doorway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's the inner essence that can reveal itself through really any part of your being. It's your beingness. And if you feel it stronger in other areas in your body, then that's great. That's great. Really, symbolically, I guess, heart, getting into your heart, your truth for you, what feels right for you. I mean, that's why the time when the message was, go to Wezak. I mean, it was my heart. I could feel it. My heart was just going, yeah, I have no idea what it's about or what I'm going into, but it was just there. That truth was so strong that even though my head tried to refute it and the logic tried to talk me out of it, because the ego, you know, it's fighting for its life right now and it's doing whatever it can to distract us from our path and for what our truth is. So it's there nattering in the background trying to distract me. But it was so strong, and I knew with what I'd learned and what I'd been practicing that that's your truth, follow it. And so that's what we're about, helping people integrate into their inner essence, say, and understand, moving from their head, because we're so caught up in the everyday thoughts in our heads and what's going on and what we've got to do. And I know this has been talked about over and over again, but I feel at this stage we're at a really important point where a lot of people have a lot of the mental concepts. They understand, a lot of the people that I work with and talk to, a coach, counsel, you talk to them about certain ideals and concepts and they go, yes, I understand. But we're at the place now where we actually have to integrate them and start to experience and put it into practice and express, exactly. And that's the next step we're at. So it's great that we're at this point, but people are still caught in the old patterns and ways of doing things. And so it becomes a challenge for them to shift out of the old way. It's really, we're in this phase now of let the old is going and we're embracing the new. But from my experience of my old life, as I say in Australia, in the transition into the new, you know, you're in this unknown. And the unknown can be kind of scary. It can be confronting, it can be daunting, but yet it's the most powerful place to be in. And I just went with it because I had nothing else to lose. My whole life that I had was gone. It's like, so what am I going to do? So I was in a position, but I understand now that when I really realized that the business, the family business, it wasn't my passion. It didn't excite me. I fell into it. I didn't know what else to do. You know, we had lots of money. I had everything, but it didn't fulfill me. And when I came where I actually acknowledged that to myself and realized that is when everything started to fall apart. And there's karmic things involved with the family, my brothers, which we won't go into here, but it's a much bigger picture often than we can see. But it's been perfect because I found my individuality. I found my own expression. I had to pull myself out of the family situation to find myself because I was caught in that. So the journey is about moving into your heart or that inner essence, and it's understanding what that means. And the struggle with a lot of people is recognizing what it is. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? And what does it mean to live in the present? What does it mean to really forgive? How do you really do that?
So what do you tell people?
Well, forgiveness, again, a lot of people when they forgive, they can forgive from the head, say, oh yes, I forgive them. So, well, can you move into your heart or to that part of yourself, that feeling center, and really feel what it's like to forgive and really accept and release the judgment, release the resentment energetically that you've been holding on to, then to tap into that part of yourself and to embrace that part of yourself. It's not about pushing it away. It's about really embracing it, opening up to that, all those feelings that you've had, embracing it in your the presence of your own love and also the other person who's been involved, and really feeling that essence of forgiveness from the depth of your soul. And from that place, that's where freedom lies, because we're all chained to the past through what we hold on to and our judgments. And you know, the judgments we have around ourselves are just amazing, and it's so toxic, but we're unconscious of this. We're mostly unaware. So this is what we're moving into, this state, and people like yourself and ourselves and all the other people you have on your show are all offering services in different ways to help people become aware and awaken to who they are. And there's so many different ways of that you can approach it from. And there's so many different people you can connect with. There's not one way and there's not one person. Mm-hmm. It's all about spreading through the myriad of light workers and healers that have really done their own work and are coming from that true place within themselves to genuinely help, that they're here to serve. And, you know, through that, the people who are ready, I mean, the shift is happening really quickly now, and it's so exciting, and there's more and more people who are stepping forward saying, you know what, I got to change. I can't do this anymore. And I know what that means. I woke up with that hangover and said, I can't do this anymore. And just from that intent alone, it opens up a whole new way.
So we know what Heart Light is about. What are kind of the services? What are the kinds of things that you assist or work with people to assist in releasing, or what is it that your goals are?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do a number of things. Our true passion, I think, as you can probably already feel, is to assist others in pursuit of their own self-mastery. And as Dean just said, it happens in a myriad of ways, but it's to be there to support, encourage, inspire others who are on their awakening journey, so that we can support them to draw out their own true creative nature, their own questing, their own gifts. We do that by, we both of us are Reiki masters, so we do teach Reiki mastery. So we teach the three levels of Reiki and the Reiki mastery, and we teach Reiki mastery in a very in-depth way. It's over a period of about a year, so it's not, there are some courses I know that you can take with attunements in a shorter time, but what we do is a very personally designed program for the individual that helps them set their dreams and goals and aspirations and make them very clear, as we did in our own process, and then we support them.
Let me see if I can do something about that noise. Keep talking.
I don't want to say hold their hands. We support them and encourage them on their process, and the time of receiving their Reiki mastery is the time when they have attained those goals. So it's a birthing process, and often it is very close to a 9-month gestation period. It is often close to that.
Yeah. And Reiki is only one vehicle that we use, because there's so many other ways, and not Reiki is not for everybody, but Reiki is really just the inner journey of yourself and healing yourself and learning to love yourself, because ultimately that's what Reiki is. But there's so much more as far as, you know, helping people just tap into their own creative essence to really go deep and look at what's stopping them, what's blocking them, looking at their belief systems, their limitations, how they are behaving, what they feel about themselves. I mean, a lot of the issues that we have as human beings is abandonment, is betrayal, self-esteem, a lot of those things. So we incorporate the same concepts but in different ways that appeal to different people. Like Rebecca does, you can talk about your art, spiritual art workshops, and we teach about the law of attraction, but not from a material place, more from connecting to your soul essence and what it is, drawing out from your soul what it is that you're yearning for and your desires.
A little bit about that, because we have a lot of people that talk about the law of attraction.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we are talking about it from a very materialistic way.
Yeah. And that's a phase, and that's got a lot of people's attention. Let's put it that way. Well, I mean, the law of attraction. They talk about focusing on the material things, the car, the house, and all those sorts of things to draw it into your life. And that's great. I mean, I've seen people do that, and they can draw the nice car into their life. There it is. But have they got the money to pay for it? Right? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to magically be presented to them. But that's how it works. You're drawing opportunities into your life. But at the next level, we work with people to connect into their soul essence, go in deep and just say, what is the real desire that's coming from within you that you would like? How would you like your life to be? What's your ideal life look like? Where would you like to be? What's your financial situation overall? What's the gifts that you have to offer? Because when you connect to those parts of yourself and really bring that expression, your soul expression, to the world, because ultimately that's what we're here. Our purpose is to become more of ourselves each day and bring that expression and our gifts to the world in whichever way we choose to. And from that, if you're coming from that passion and that excitement and that zest for life and creating that around you, then the financial and material things, they just become part of it to whatever level you want. But it's not the focus. So that's what we work with people to help them, because that's not easy to do on your own, to help them just center themselves, be quiet, allow that part of yourself to come more alive, to bring it more forward into your being. Give it more of a voice so that you can listen, quieten yourself down so you can hear what the guidance is, what your intuitive voice is saying to you. Yeah. So Beck does spiritual art classes as well, which is very creative.
One of them is a mandala painting class, so that, you know, with the use of the mandala, it helps people focus, to bring in symbology, to create the imagery that's often focused on a particular aspect of their lives that they want to manifest, or just simply an expression of themselves, which is one of the most powerful ones to do. So there are mandala painting classes.
Creating their own mandalas?
Yes. So through the use of guided meditation and focusing in again on their heart's desires, and connecting with that third eye, inner sight aspects of themselves, they receive imagery and symbology that then they then paint. And that mandala becomes a focus for them for manifesting their own intent, for finding peace in their lives, for even if it's just simply a self-portrait mandala, so that it's an access point. It's again another doorway into the heart of themselves. So, and we teach meditation classes. We host Reiki healing evenings where other people come to share their gifts, and you experience the individual gifts of other healers.
Mm. One of the latest things that I'm endeavoring to help people understand is we often hear the term that your external reality is a reflection of what's going on inside of you. And again, it's a mental concept, but what does that really mean? I call it the language of life. Your life is speaking to you all the time, because if you are creating your life, and quantum physics and science has now already proven that your reality is being reflected back to you totally and completely of what's going on within inside of you. And that's at conscious levels and unconscious levels. So the other thing that we help people with is, okay, so where are you struggling in your life? What are you continually to struggle with? What's challenging you constantly? And through some counsel and talking to them, you find out what that is. And through that, you can generally turn it around to see what the unconscious belief is or concept or perception that they have that they didn't realize that they had, that's why it's unconscious, that is creating this in their life. And then when you can see that, you're actually helping them become aware of it. It's no longer unconscious. You can then work with it to change your outer reality for the better. Can I give you a little example?
Yes, please.
My own example here, because it was quite profound and it was quite entertaining, but it was quite threatening for me. And this was only last year, not long ago. And I was working at a winery, and there was an old farmer there. We'll call him Jack. He'd been there for a long time, and was working. There was a farmer's market and a winery, and he was working the land and general help. But he was a very grumpy, angry old guy, and very hard to get on with, and didn't take direction too easily. He was just angry, but his anger was his own anger for not really fulfilling his own life. He's felt trapped and what have you, so you can understand that. Well, anyway, one day I went in there and asked him to light a fire because it was cold, and one of the ladies working there was pregnant, so I said, you know, we need to keep it warm because we didn't have great heating facilities there, so we had to get heaters and fireplaces going. And I left and came back the next day and found out that he hadn't done it. So I had to confront him, and I knew it wasn't going to be fun, but I had to say to Jack, Jack, can you please light the fire, because the lady was working again, because you didn't do it yesterday. And he absolutely lost it. He had an axe in his hand because he'd been chopping wood. And he was standing, you know, from you to me away, like just a few feet. And he absolutely went crazy, yelling, screaming at me, saying he's got this axe and I'm not afraid to use it on you, Dean. And no one knows what it's like to be cold when I was cold, and no one cares that I can't pay my bills. So all his issues he projected onto me. And he was threatening me with his axe. Now, the old Dean, who was the aggressive, angry guy.
We know what he would have done.
Yeah, exactly. but it was a test for me, and all I did was just stand my ground. I just allowed him to vent. And in the end, when he'd finished, my only response to him was I looked at him and said, "Grow up, Jack." And which kind of left him dumbfounded, because he was wanting a fight. He wanted me to engage. So I just said, "Grow up," and walked out. Well, here's the thing. I got home that night, and I'm talking to Rebecca about it and saying, well, okay, it's my he's in my reality. I'm the only person in the universe that he is going mad at and threatening with an axe. So what's that showing me about me? Because this is a level you get to. And so if we teach this, we still have to live it ourselves. So I was very aware of this, and I'm thinking, well, I have no idea what that means. But there's something there for me. There's a gift in it for me. And so I put it out there. I said, okay, Spirit, I need some guidance here on what the lesson is for me, and let it go. 3 days later, it came to me. It said, Dean, you are still in judgment of the old, angry, aggressive you. You have not made peace with that part of yourself and come to terms and love that part of yourself. You are still judging. And it was like, oh, man, okay, I get that. It was just this feeling. It's like, woof, right through me. So I went into a meditation and connected to the aggressive part of me that was the drinking and fighting and all that sort of thing. And I really opened up to him and embraced him and let go of the judgment, forgave him, because I forgave myself for back then, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know how to handle myself. I didn't know what else to do. It was the only way I could cope. And so I understood that, gave myself that permission, forgave myself and embraced that part of myself and basically loved that part of myself. And because, you know, there was times I'd think back at the certain things and I would cringe. It was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Now I think back and go, yeah, it doesn't come up very often now, but it's like, yeah, but I didn't know any better and there's no reaction. So I really went in and made peace with that part of myself. So that was the gift that Jack gave me. Well, 3 days later, he avoided me for 3 days at work there. 3 days after that, he came into the office and just walked up to me and said, "Oh, can I help you with the garbage, or can I do this for you?" And I looked at Jack and I said, "Sure, Jack." There was nothing else that was said in between. From that moment, you know, he could not have been more helpful. The staff couldn't believe how he was behaving. They'd never ever seen him be so helpful and kind. I mean, this is the impact. I could have judged Jack and made him wrong and kept that chain, but I turned it on because it was my reality. Mm-hmm. And it freed me, it freed Jack. And he was just amazing after that. 3 months later, he actually had a heart attack and died. I'm not saying that's what happens, but it was all part of the completion of the farm. It was his time, but it was perfect opportunity to me, and I'm so grateful that I had that
that
option.
It was a great opportunity for him.
Oh,
he was able to heal something.
Absolutely. Before he crossed. So yeah. It was perfect. So that's the level we're talking about of your reality. So if you've got people that are not treating you very nicely or are taking advantage of you, then really it's just levels of yourself, parts of yourself that you're not loving. And so there's your clues. And if you can turn that around and go into those, that's how you find peace.
And I think, you know, the beauty in all of that is, you know, you don't really want somebody else to be responsible for how you act or feel or are. I mean, you want to take responsibility for your own stuff. And, you know, the gift of, you know, understanding what that means when you can take responsibility and actually, you know, love, forgive, understand your own essence and, you know, what happened when you were a wounded child that, you know, didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it makes a huge shift in it. You no longer have to have that guilt or that anger or that judgment, and the way it dissipates is just incredible when you get that aha moment.
It's the path to freedom. It's the path to inner freedom, and that's what we all seek. I mean, everybody in this planet, really at the depths of their soul, they want peace, whether they're the worst terrorists or it doesn't matter. Everybody at their core wants peace.
Mm-hmm.
But because we operate from our wounds and from our, you know, our hurts and our anger, that we lose that. So it is the path to freedom. And I mean, my friends and family, they can't believe that I'm the same guy. They can't believe it. And I never said boo. I withdrew. I shut down. I didn't talk much. I only did when I had a drink, because that gave me the Dutch courage to, and all I was doing was seeking attention because I never got it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my way of dealing with it. And I was trapped in that. And it just, that one moment where I said, you know what, enough. And then the journey has been incredible. We have our ups and downs, we have our struggles, but if you can look at life as being, you know, such a wonderful gift, because it's our journey into ourself. And the external world is a wonderful opportunity to really reflect on where you can release judgment of yourself and forgive. Anyway, I've been talking a lot, darling. Would you like to say something?
Oh, it's the best school there is, isn't it, life? Yeah. Just trying to think what else we can talk to you about that Heartlight does. One of our passions as well is taking what we call spiritual safaris. So we have taken spiritual safaris together with small, intimate groups, usually about 10 or 12 people. We've gone to Sedona, Arizona, and this summer Dean is planning a spiritual safari up to Temagami, Ontario, to a spiritual retreat. This one's especially for men. So maybe he can talk about it best, but it will include an introduction to the native teachings, shamanic journeying, vision questing. They'll do a sweat lodge and that sort of thing. So it'll be a really powerful week for men this summer. And this fall, we're taking a spiritual safari to Hawaii on the Big Island to a Buddhist retreat center that's there for a week. So I'll have an opportunity to be together again with like-minded people to really take in the magic and the majesty of the Hawaiian culture and be in the land and focus on being in the now, being fully present, so that on our retreats we can really focus on a full-time basis with the people present to learn to be together and to be free, to be in the moment, to really deeply connect with nature. I think we're all finding that one of the deepest spiritual connections we can find on the planet is connecting to her, to Mother Earth, and to the nature kingdom. So we'll be doing that as well. We plan in the future. We're planning a trip to Australia as well. So
that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. Come on down. So we have exciting things planned. Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the men's group?
In the past, I've run what I call a men's mastery group. It was a monthly get together just with a few guys in my living room, those that were ready to talk about spiritual ideals and help them open up about their feelings and what's going on in their life. Give them a space to be able to do that, because normally men don't have that opportunity much. Either they go to the pub, they talk to their mates, it's about the Blue Jays or the Maple Leafs, and which is what we did in Australia. That's just it's a guy thing. So looking to create a space for men to come together and support each other. And so up in Tomogamy, we have friends who've got a wonderful retreat centre up there on High Rock Island. Excuse me. And so go up there for about 6 days and have time to really reflect on what it means to be a male in this day and age, the expectations that perhaps are put on us as men in the workforce, at home, how we see that role, the difficulties we have in understanding who we are, and we're the ones that go out and slay the beast, and we've got this, you know, this programming that we have to be the provider, and if we're not providing, then we're failures, all those sorts of things. So just to talk about those things, and to meditate, to make the inner connection, do a sweat lodge, you know, do some cleansing and some clearing, and give them a space just to open up and talk about things that they never normally would do. And Tomogamy is just it's a beautiful place up there. It's so quiet. What we love about it is you're so far away that you're on a little island there, and the silence is just incredible. We were up there over the long weekend, and it's just a beautiful place. You're right in nature. You stay in little cabins in the forest on this island, and then there's a main cottage, and there's a sacred circle where we teach some of the native traditions about honouring the directions and honouring all the races and honouring Father Sky, Mother Earth, honouring within. So it's really it's non-religious. It's more just an honouring of all things. And it's just a wonderful space to be in. There's canoeing, there's swimming. We'll be doing some, you know, discussion groups in the morning, and meditating, and then in the afternoon we can be hiking or doing other activities, or they can be painting or what have you. So we may be doing a vision quest depending on the numbers and the energy of the group, which means we may send them out just for a day or 2 days, one night on a little island with a tent, with a fire, and just themselves, just to be with themselves totally on their own, which is a very powerful experience to do. Mm-hmm. So it's really just creating a space for guys to feel safe enough in a group of guys that are ready and open to explore who they really are, and to let down the guard, let down that wall that a lot of men have, into the freedom of just being, which is what we call this retreat, the freedom of being. Yeah. But the guys still, a lot of them are kind of on the verge, but when it comes to crunch time, and they're still a little shy, but they're coming around, and it's important. I mean, we are anchoring the divine feminine on the planet. The feminine energy is what we're needing to empower, and women, we are very big on empowering women to embrace themselves fully. And that's also with men. They need to start to embrace their feminine side and understand what that is. And it's not about being a sissy or anything like that, because that's the connotations that they have around feminine energy, and it's nothing like that at all. It's a very powerful part of themselves that they have shut down through generations of saying, don't cry, you can't show your feelings, don't do that, because that's not manly. And look what we've done. Yeah. Look what we've done on this planet.
But it was necessary.
It's absolutely necessary.
It was necessary to get us to where we are. And, you know, we didn't have language and we didn't have, you know, communication. And, you know, there were all these things that needed to be done to get us to where we are. And, yeah, it went too far, but it was necessary.
It's, yeah, yeah. It is balancing out now, which is wonderful. And
quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this time, it's a time that's never been before, where it's really able to balance.
Yeah, yeah. So while I'm working with the men, I do find that I do have a lot of women clients who have men issues, funny enough.
Yeah.
But I
there's a lot of women, a lot of
male issues. Male issues, absolutely, but they tend to go to women, but I do attract a lot to, because I can help them from
accent.
could be. Have to ask them. I'm not sure about that one.
As long as she's okay with it, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Worse for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, it's just offering a number of avenues and vehicles to help people in whatever way fits for them. And of course, as we've said before, we're all about. There's many options. There's many people that it's not about just having a client and then they're just to work with us. It doesn't work that way. No, go and see whoever you're drawn to see. Go and see as many people as you can that you're drawn to, because there's so much. We're just one little piece of the puzzle. You're another piece of the puzzle, Lori, and there's many others out there. So be open. And there's no competition out there. There's no competition.
It's all about community right now.
It's community. It's working together. We're all one. I mean, we're here helping each other. So it's supporting each other. And I mean, it's a trip.
Yes, it is. Definitely. I'm just going to ask you one more question, and then we're probably, you know, pretty good. But you talk about meditation. What types of meditation, or how does that work in what you teach? Like, there's so many different ways to meditate.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do teach a course on introduction to meditation and the chakras. So while introducing the body's energy centers and the, you know, the emotional centers, we're also just in a cursory way introducing the many different types of meditation that there are, whether it's through gazing meditation, through silent meditation, guided meditation, focusing on a candle, walking meditation. So we introduce the ways and the many doorways into which we, and ultimately life becomes prayer and meditation itself. So we introduce people to it so that they begin to feel comfortable and are able to introduce it into their everyday lives. But on a monthly basis, we host an evening on the fourth Wednesday of every month where we do two meditations. The first one, and these are both guided meditations. The first one, and what Dean and I together have a great time just tag teaming, one or the other we'll do, or we share sometimes. But the first meditation is focusing on going within, so acknowledging that our bodies themselves contain, again, based on quantum physics, but our bodies contain everything that's in the universe, so that the journey inside to balance our four body system, our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual bodies, is the most important thing, because when we're balanced inside, that's when we begin to experience peace and balance in our external lives. So the first meditation in the evening is that, focusing inwardly. And then the second meditation is, again, going on a journey inside, but it's a journey inside in order to share outside. so that it's to shine greater light and love and peace on those around us in our lives, in our community, and in the world, so that we begin to connect on that beautiful grid, the intranet that exists all around the planet that joins people of like minds to support all of humanity and Mother Earth. So it has an internal focus and also the purpose that we are all one on the planet, and what we do in our living room, whether there's six people or 60 people, is making a profound difference through that connection. That the physical internet is just that. It's the physical internet. We have actually a much more powerful one that's innate in all of us, and we're all learning to connect in that place. So that's our focus in meditation. Mm.
That's great.
Well said.
So why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
Well, the fastest way is through our website, which is heartlight.ca. Our phone number is 905-939-1071. We offer programs out of our home and private counseling in our home in Schaumburg, on Church Street in Schaumburg, Ontario. Just a beautiful hamlet just northwest of Toronto.
And when you do workshops there, do people stay, or do you get them to go to other places nearby? Or
usually when we host workshops in our home, they're just one-day workshops. We are contemplating longer workshops for the weekend, particularly focusing on couples, etc., although those haven't manifested yet, but they will in the future, and there are lots of places locally where people can stay. But usually it's one-day workshops in our home.
It's usually a great escape for people. They come from many different areas, but particularly coming up from Toronto. If you don't know Schaumburg, it's a quiet, innocent little town, very quiet, peaceful, and it's a wonderful escape from the big smoke. And people, we just feel that the energy there is very quiet and
clear,
so that we can do the work we need to do. And it's a good excursion and getaway for people.
How far away is it?
Oh, look, it's, 40-50 minutes, depending on traffic. It's 9 and 27. It's kind of the same.
Okay.
It's north of as Newmarket, but it's west on Highway 9.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would go by that whenever I go home, which is on sound. But, yeah, okay, so I should know that, but I somehow... You know, I'm sure I've seen it.
It's an open invitation, Laurie. We hope to have you.
Beautiful. Well, it's been my honor, and maybe we'll have you come back in the fall and talk about some maybe new programs that you're starting or something that you're going to do, and I would definitely be honored to have you back.
It would be our pleasure.
We would love to, and thank you very much for providing the opportunity and with the work you're doing and giving everybody a voice. I think it's awesome, and you're doing great work, and it's all going to be fabulous. So
we're excited to be part of your community. Yeah, blessings, everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.